Welcome to Rising Stars, where Miriam Knight, publisher of New Consciousness Review, interviews exciting new voices in the world of progressive and transformational books, films, and ideas, who offer intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us as we celebrate the conscious awakening and explore many expressions of consciousness in action.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Miriam Knight, and my guest today is Carl Greer. Carl is a PhD and a psych D, a doctor of psychology. He's a practicing clinical psychologist, Jungian analyst, shamanic practitioner, and an author who teaches readers how to use shamanic and Jungian techniques to gain insight and energies for changing a health story that might be dissatisfying to them. He teaches at the C.G. Jung Institute of Chicago, and he's on the staff at the Replogle Center for Counseling and Well-Being, and he's involved in various charities. Now, he is the author of the very well-regarded, best-selling book, Change Your Story, Change Your Life. Now, today we're going to discuss his new book that comes out in a few weeks, called Change the Story of Your Health, Using Shamanic and Jungian Techniques for Healing. I'm delighted to welcome him to the show. Hello, Carl.
Afternoon, Miriam.
Now, tell me how you made the personal journey from classically trained psychotherapist to shaman, or should I say shamanic shrink?
Well, as a kid, I would read the stories about the mountain men and medicine men and women, and I was fascinated by those stories. And as I got older, I read stories by Castaneda and Lynn Andrews and Hermo Storm, and fantasized about, boy, that's an interesting journey in life to study shamanism. But I never felt that with my responsibilities that I'd ever be able to pull up for a period of time and study. But then I had an opportunity when I was about 60 years old to do so, and I did. And I studied with a fellow named Alberto Viotto, was on his staff teaching, and then spent a lot of time with other shamans in various parts of the world doing work and studying, and it's become a very important spiritual discipline for me.
Well, I would imagine that this was a bit of a shock to your colleagues, and very adventurous of you to make that shift at the age of 60. How was it viewed by your colleagues?
Well, there are some people who think some of these alternative spiritual practices are kind of woo-woo if you're kind of in the mainline Western medicine tradition. But some are also, I think, searching for their own spiritual home. And so I think they were supportive and interested in it. And they were certainly willing to listen and even experience some of the things that I had experienced. And I think in a lot of these practices, Miriam, unless you experience them yourself, you just can't write about them or talk about them or think about them. You actually have to try them out. And those who did, I think, in many cases, were surprised at what resulted.
How has this changed your practice? You have moved really into the realm of the healer. I know certainly psychologists are considered healers, but do you feel that you are more effective now using these shamanic techniques?
I don't know. It's different. I think it's just something else that I can bring into the room, and I don't do it with all people that I work with all the time, but it's another worldview that is very compatible with the shamanic, the Jungian worldview. The shamanic worldview and the Jungian worldview have some similarities that they reinforce each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, your first book, Change Your Story, Change Your Life, was a great success. Why did you feel the need to follow it up with Change the Story of Your Health?
As an older guy myself, I'm around people who are really concerned about their health. And as a father and grandfather, I see my kids and even my grandkids that they have health questions and concerns. And in a time when healthcare is in the news and many specialists are saying you should do this or that and new alternative treatments are talked about all the time, I thought it would be useful for people to have a framework to start thinking about health issues so that they could take more charge than perhaps they had been in being in control of their own health story. Doesn't mean that they don't talk to doctors and so forth, but at least they have more insights into how the various factors that make them healthy or unhealthy interrelate and find ways to do something about it that perhaps they didn't realize they could.
Mm-hmm. You talk about changing your story in both books. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the first book, I was making the point that we all have a life about which a story could be told. And we all have health about which a story could be told. And I think it opens up the way we think about things, Miriam, if we can think about stories with chapters, health chapters about your exercise and your diet and your treatment of chronic conditions and your treatment of acute ailments and how you're aging and your self-image, your sexuality, and so forth. And by kind of focusing on various aspects of your health to get a real baseline as to what's going on, that's a starting point. And then you can say, are you satisfied with it or not? And if you're not, what might you do about it? What are the alternatives? And even if you in many cases, say, I'd like it to be different, then you butt up against the reasons that, conscious and unconscious, you're not able to make the changes. And so I'm trying to suggest in my book that there are things that you can do to move from an existing health story to a new, better one, in part by getting in touch with some of the unconscious reasons that you might have been using to keep you from living that new health story.
Throughout your book, you have many different exercises that you suggest. I think you call them exercises for expanding awareness. And
yes.
And one of the first ones that you suggest is going into the quiet. It's interesting. I've heard other intuitives like James Van Praagh refer to this as a foundational practice. Can you describe it for us, and why is it so valuable?
Well, my shamanic worldview has similarities, I think, to cosmologists and quantum physicists. In the case of the cosmologists who speculate about the whys and wherefores of the universe, I believe there was a place before the Big Bang, a place of pure potential from which our universe and perhaps other universes continue to come. And in my own shamanic work, I've encountered that place. I've experienced it. And for me, it was a place of pure potential before an idea, before the form of an idea, before the energization of an idea. And it's a place from which we came in this lifetime. It's the place from which we'll go back to. It's a mysterious place, obviously, but a place that I think we can all get to and relate to. And it has wisdom, and it has intelligence and consciousness. And so I'm suggesting that if we can get to that place, and I suggest a journey for people to take to get there, you can ask it questions about, you know, what's going on in my health right now? What do I need to know? What do I need to perhaps give up? What do I need to gain? And so on and so forth. So it's it's a realm that I call a transpersonal realm, and I describe others that we can engage with to get energy and insights into our health story, energies to change if we choose to do so.
Mm-hmm. I remarked on some similarities among the journeys in that you have, you know, a journey to a place or a situation, and then there are things that you want to release, and then there are things that negative things that you want to release, and then positive things you want to bring back in. So there's this motion, this journey, the getting rid of, the filling up. Is that something that's common to many different traditions?
I believe so. I mean, if you look at acupuncture, for example, and Ayurvedic, I mean, part of it is what you need to have less of, what you need to have more of. And I think shamans who work with energy would say that part of the work is to get rid of certain energies that don't serve you and replace them with energies that better serve you. And so part of the practices that I describe, working with elements and times in nature and the quiet and other transpersonal realms, are to ask and work with those places to help you get rid of that which you need to, and to gain that which you need to gain, and have balance restored in your system so that if there was a homeostasis that wasn't working so well before you did this work, you have a better equilibrium that's now working better than it was before you emptied and filled.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of ironic that most psychologists think that if you hear messages from some place outside you, you're crazy. But here you're inviting people to do just that. It's wonderful. We have to take a break now.
Sure.
Take a break now, but then we'll be right back with Carl Greer talking about changing the story of your health.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to our conversation with Carl Greer about his book, Change the Story of Your Health. So, Carl, why do you suggest in your book looking at the bigger story of our health rather than just focusing on what we want to change?
The word health, interestingly, has roots in the word wholeness. And I believe that our health story is part of the larger story of our emotions, our thoughts, our spirituality, our relationship to energy. and that sometimes by broadening the inquiry to these other areas, we get insights that we make a change in the way we think about spirituality and the way we relate to spirit, or a change in our psychological dynamics that will affect our physical health. And similarly, as we make changes in our physical health, our energy and our psychology and our spiritual practices may change as well. So I think they're all interrelated, and I think we get more possible freedom of action, Miriam, by looking at our health as part of a larger picture.
Now, in many ways, this is a very personal book, and you actually apply the dictum, healer, heal thyself, by applying the techniques to your own situation. How have you worked with your own doctors and still used these healing techniques to address your own physical issues?
I feel fortunate. I have a really fine group of Western doctors who in many cases also are believers in the mysteries of healing. And so they would not discount the work that I do or the way I think about things. However, there is some well-established Western medicine principles that I avail myself of. You know, in certain cases, I'll use an antibiotic for something going on in my system. I'm not against surgeries in certain situations, but I think what I do at the margin can occasionally preclude the need for the interventions I otherwise might have had, certainly facilitate healing quicker. And the big thing, it can prevent things from happening, I believe, that otherwise would have. It's very compatible with the medical people that I work with, that which I do on my own. It helps me heal quicker. It may prevent things. And it's a good adjunct.
I think, having studied psychology as well, I'm sure you're familiar with the notion of the witch doctor putting a curse on someone and having that person go into the jungle and die because he was told by the witch doctor he would die. So the power of our thoughts cannot be disputed. And I was particularly fascinated with one of the stories you relate about working with a woman with breast cancer, how you used imagery and crystals. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, this was really kind of early on in my work. This was probably back in the 80s, and I had was having some spontaneous journeys and some dreams, shamanic dreams. I'm not sure where they all came from, but they came from someplace. And then I read Michael Harner's book about shamanism, and I was taking some journeys on my own. And this woman had a partial mastectomy, was having radiation and chemotherapy. And the wound on her breast was became very raw and infected and oozing pus. And so we did some shamanic work. And as I was doing it, I had these images, Miriam, of a woman in a lagoon with a crystal, and a me under a tree with a crystal. And her crystal and mine were kind of feeding each other, and then I, in kind of real time with the woman I was working with, I had a crystal as well, and somehow my crystal seemed to be energized, and then I was just guided in working with her to do other things. I mean, among other things, she was mobilizing her inner healers, and I was putting energy into clearing that which needed to be cleared about the infection. And so we were really in sync in doing the work. And amazing to me, having not ever done this before, in a a relatively short period of time, less than an hour, the infection cleared and the thing closed up. Now, I can't say, you know, if it was what we did or it would have done it anyway, or as you suggested before, the power of suggestion, the placebo effect, whatever it was, it worked in that moment for that woman.
Well, I do not downgrade or dismiss the power of the placebo effect. In fact, that's the gold standard for pharmaceuticals, trying to beat it.
Sure.
Anyway, you have this kind of constant theme through the book of taking responsibility for one's own health. So healing really is a partnership between the healer and the healee, as opposed to a lot of Western medicine where, you know, you just kind of put yourself in the hands of a doctor and say, heal me, give me a drug, give me something.
Yep.
Which goes back to the placebo effect, which is marshaling one's own healing force. So, you know, in taking responsibility for your health, one of the things you call for in the book is for people to do their own research. What did you mean by that?
Well, in an age of so many experts, you know, you go to a general practitioner who then refers you to this person, to this person, this person. You really can become very dependent on the system, and you don't really do your own research in the sense of checking out what are good diets, what are good exercise regimens, what are good treatments for that which I'm suffering. So I think there's a benefit for people to make themselves aware at kind of the intellectual level as to what is out there for them given their particular condition. But I'm also saying, as you mentioned earlier, we all have these inner capacities to heal that I think we could mobilize, and we can deal with them as if they're inner parts of ourselves. For example, I talk about an inner healer. I talk about the wisdom of a symptom that has awareness and consciousness with which we can communicate. And so that would be another source of doing research, of asking these transpersonal realms or these parts of ourselves that are involved in our sickness and in our healing. Ask them, hey, what's up? What can we do differently? What are you trying to show me? And I have found that when people do that, in many cases, it's very useful for them.
Mm-hmm. You frequently recommend journaling. Why is that so helpful?
I think it's helpful to start off, well, first of all, keeping track of the work that you do so you can refer back to it. I think that's useful. But also to be scrupulously honest with yourself as to what is. In my first book, I was struck in working with a number of people over the years that when you ask somebody, well, what's your story? Oftentimes they want to tell you the story that they want others to believe about them, but not necessarily their true story. Mm-hmm. And similarly with your health. Somebody says, well, how are you doing, Maria? Well, I'm okay, I'm fine. Well, that may be a socially conventional, you know, you don't want to get into it kind of an answer. But it also could be, hey, I don't want to, I'm not doing so well, but I don't really want to think about it. It's just nothing I can do about it anyway, et cetera, et cetera. So the journaling allows you to start to be scrupulous with yourself as to what is as it relates to the story of your health. And I talk about, so these would be left brain practices to engage your health story, but I also say, you know, to kind of mix it up a little bit, what are the themes that then you're uncovering about your health? What are the stories you tell yourself? For example, you know, everybody in our family has died by age 55 with a heart attack, and I probably will too. I mean, that would be a story that people say. Or, you know, I'm healthy as a horse. I can do basically whatever I want, and I'm not going to get sick. And there's variations on all these stories that if a person can become aware of those stories and the themes that are embodied in them, it gives them a chance to reflect on them and say, hey, am I getting trapped by these themes? Are there things I could do differently? And then I suggest practices using more of the right brain. You know, what's the song that captures your health? Or what's a poem that does? Or what's a color? Or what's an image? And so on and so forth. So you're kind of loosening up the way in which you're engaging it. And these are all preparatory or, you know, stand alone before you get into some of the expanded awareness practices to get into these transpersonal realms and unconscious influences on your health.
That reminds me of the rather fine line between being brutally honest with your present situation or looking at the probably the worst implications of it versus allowing yourself to be overwhelmed by, let's say, a bad prognosis. And how do you keep up the positive healing energy in the face of the dire predictions of, you know, you're going to die kind of thing from your doctor?
Well, in the shamanic worldview, and I'm sure other traditions have a similar feeling, at one level, things just are. You know, your doctor says you've got metastatic cancer with so many times to live, you know, time in the sense of months, maybe. And so that's just kind of what is. Then how you feel about it, those reactions, those are yours. And I'm suggesting ways to interact in a dialogic way with those feelings, for example, your fear or your terror, to work with it, and just in the process of having a conversation with it in an alchemical kind of a way, things often change. You get a new sense about it. You can then start to incorporate this fact into your life in a new way that you otherwise wouldn't have been able to do had you not started to work some of the processes I talk about, because you're absolutely right. For many of us, it's overwhelmingly, and then we just kind of basically tune out in that particular case for the rest of our lives until we die. But I'm saying there's other ways to work with that fact, and I describe what people can do, and in some cases what people have done through these practices.
Fascinating. Well, that's the signal for our next break. We will be right back with Dr. Carl Greer about his book, Change the Story of Your Health. Stay with us.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Sparky the Fire Dog here. Make sure your family has a fire escape plan, and they practice it twice a year. One important thing to practice is get low and go. If you see or smell smoke, it's important to get low and go. Protect your family from fire. For more information, visit sparky.org.
We want to keep you, your family, and your community safer from fire. This message brought to you by the National Fire Protection Association and your local fire department. Visit sparky.org.
Welcome back to our conversation with Carl Greer about changing the story of your health. So, Carl, one of the techniques that you particularly employ is working with the elements of nature, working with the directions. These are drawn from various indigenous shamanic traditions. And you did mention earlier that you had worked with Alberto Villoldo. What drew you to these techniques, and how do you feel that they actually interact with our energies?
Again, my worldview has been shaped by my experiences, and since I've experienced this place that I call the quiet, the place from which all things come, then I have to speculate, well, what does that mean? And so the way I understand it, Miriam, is that from this, the one, we have all the things in this visible world that we see that are infused by the energy of the one in its consciousness, and that would include plants, rocks, animals, humans. And then it would also include all the invisible things that we don't see, and I talk about archetypal energies that influence how people think, act, and feel. But in the world of nature, then, if my thesis is right, that it all comes from this one place, then in that sense, everything contains the one, and the one contains the many, and everything is interconnected at some level. And those interconnections can be strengthened by our intent or lessened by our neglect, but they're always present. And since we are all part of the natural world, and we're made up of water and earth and air and fire, we can relate to those elements individually and collectively, and through ceremony and ritual and intent, gain from them through a relationship. And I believe that, and I've seen how that's worked, as I believe that just being in nature can be very healing, and for particular people, particular places at times in nature can be even more particularly healing. Mm-hmm. So that's based on my own experience and the worldview that I just gave you, the fact that everything's connected in a living, aware universe.
Do you find that it is a requirement or particularly helpful for the patient to share this worldview or to believe a priori that they can be healed in order for it to be effective?
I think it certainly helps. And it's certainly, if they don't really believe in it, they're probably not going to do it. And my work is not so much as a healer to do for them. It's to really create a space for them to do for themselves. And so my hope would be to get them to actually, do the journey, not me do the journey on their behalf and then tell them what I found, but which I can't do. But I'd rather they learn to do it. And then even if it's they don't believe in it, if they do it and have all of a sudden an aha experience, well, then the proof's in the pudding. And the shamanic work is pretty experiential, not pretty, it's experiential. So it's not based on precepts as much as it's on percepts. It's kind of what you perceive when you're doing it as opposed to some rules as to this is how things work. And when you describe shamanism, it doesn't make any sense to me because it's not double-blinded, tested mm-hmm. out. People need to experience it. And then when they do, they've either had something that's useful or not.
Well, I think there is a lot of spontaneous work going on where people who have kind of come to the end of their rope surrender, and then they get, whether it's a psychic opening or a vision or a spontaneous healing, that does make them believers and then proselytizers.
Yes.
So, and I have the feeling that this is increasing as more people are open to the possibility, then they experience it, kind of, you know, give it a chance and it'll happen. Are there some ailments, areas of concern, of health concern that you find recurring in your practice that are particularly helped by these techniques?
Not one more than another. They're all, based on the idea that we can, you know, every illness we have has a message for us if we listen to it. We may not want to hear what it is, but it has a message. We all have an inner healer that we can engage. And the practices to relate to whatever our illness are involve our seeing if there are past determinants for it, what the future might look under certain scenarios about it, and what choices on a almost minute-to-minute timeline that we can make in the present to affect our health. And I think those principles, past, present, future, would encompass really any physical ailment that we have. And a lot of the changes that I see in people are not like huge, big, dramatic changes all at once, although I've seen that. It's more just what are the little things you can do differently as a result of these kinds of practices that over time accumulate to really changing your health story. And it takes some work. You have to really be wanting to do it. And even back to your question about the research, when you've done the research, sticking to it. Two thoughts about that. Most people would say diets, medicine is important, and eat not too much, mostly real foods. Mostly plants. I think Michael Pollan, wrote about that. And people would say exercise is important, reduce your stress, and you probably need supplements of some sort in this day and age. And yet, a lot of times people don't do that. They might know that's right, but they don't do it for a variety of reasons. So just to comply with what you know is useful, I think it's a big gift to yourself, and it's amazing to me how many people who would say all these things don't do it. And the practices in my book at least give a person a chance to kind of get behind some of the reasons that they don't do it and give them some help energetically to make those changes at the margin that they otherwise might not have made.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you talk a lot about getting back to nature, getting closer to nature in the book. And I remember reading a study that showed that just walking on the earth barefoot gives you more antioxidants than a fistful of supplements.
Yeah, I believe, I don't know that, the factual things about that, but I certainly believe that. You get the... back to your point about the spontaneity of things happening as more people believe it. I think as you get to a certain more, I'm going to call it altered state or a state where your have less focused attention, you're less in your frontal lobes, in your sympathetic nervous system, you're more in the parasympathetic nervous system, other parts of your brain are working, and you do that by slowing down the brain waves. That's more conducive to healing, and people experience that more, it's been measured, when they're in nature than when they're walking around a city. And so just by being in nature, you set up some conditions for these spontaneous things to happen, as well as you set in place certain healing mechanisms as certain other neurotransmitters start to be involved compared to when you're in a more focused, sympathetic nervous system-driven state.
Mm-hmm. Is this approach helpful in dealing with chronic conditions to the same extent as with acute conditions?
I believe so. I mean, it's basically it's working with that chronic condition and trying to find out what is its message for you. What does it want? Can you negotiate a new relationship with it? How does it fit into your overall life plan with these other fronts we talked about? You know, how does it affect your relationships, your job, your spiritual practices, your psychology? And it just it can loosen things up. I mean, people talk sometimes, Miriam, about I feel healed, even though I'm still going to die from this dire prognosis. And people say, well, that's just kind of a funny thing. But it's true, because you're more at peace. You're more ready to live the rest of your life, whatever it is, if you have healing, than if you're back to what we talked about earlier, just terrified and just checking out. I've seen people with relatively short periods of life to live who have really, in a sincere, honest way, they've been scared, but they've had a very full remaining few months or year or two in ways that they never would have believed had they not done some of this work.
Absolutely. I remember Bernie Siegel talking about a patient who was told he was going to die and went out to enjoy himself and had so much fun he didn't die. For years.
No, that happens too. That happens too, for sure.
Well, there's our break, and we'll be right back with Carl Greer. Stay with us.
Bringing you the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Today, my new dad threw a barbecue.
I burnt everything.
And then we played catch.
I broke Mr. Lewis's window. And then, somehow, my hand.
My hand! And then my dad even let me drive his car.
The hospital's on the right! It was a rough day.
It was a great day.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. So you had a really interesting afterword right at the end of your book where you talk about evidence for the effectiveness of energy medicine. And you talk about a cardiologist that you heard speak who said that less than half of what he does is based on evidence-based medicines.
Yes.
So it sounds like this is a growing wave. Is that how you see it?
I think people in Western medicine are seeing the interrelationships of a lot more things than they did, say, 50, 60 years ago. For example, in breast cancer, wasn't so many years ago, one of the big approaches was you just cut everything out and keep cutting and cutting and cutting without really understanding all the systemic influences on cancer, how certain genes turn on to create it, how certain genes turn on to keep it from happening, and how you can't not pay attention to the full systems, the body systems, when you deal with many of these ailments. So I think people are starting to see that, and you can measure a thought can trigger an emotion, and an endocrine system response, and you can kind of track that, and you can see how vibrations in one part of the body almost instantaneously affect others, and when there is a state of disease, there's machines that can kind of pick up how vibrationally the energy of your body looks, and when you're in a more healthy state, it looks different. Now, what one does to cause it to go from unhealthy to healthy is still part of the mystery and the art, but besides just giving medicine or homeopathic remedies, we've seen and we've talked about it even earlier today, you know, your thoughts and the placebo, the beliefs can affect these images. As well as, I believe, when you go to some of these transpersonal realms and you do work in the lower world or the upper world or with your inner healer, I think that those interactions, working with your dreams, can affect all these fields so that health can occur more than had you not done the work.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the inner healer a number of times. How do you envision this entity?
For me, it's akin to like the wise inner person, the wise old man or the wise old woman. But it's also kind of unique in that it has a healing aspect to it. I mean, physical component, which we think about, but also we have a psychological immune system and a spiritual immune system and a energetic immune system, all of which can be influenced and interact with each other. So one personification of some of these things I'm talking about would be what I would call an inner healer, which has appeared to different people in different forms, but it just seems to be an intelligent part of ourselves that we're usually not aware with, that we can relate to more than we think, to cooperatively engage in our own healing. And I really believe that we have more self-healing capabilities than we think, but part of it is trying to engage those in cooperation with our ego consciousness. And you do that through, among other things, a conversation with it, and I talk about how that conversation might look.
My husband is a hypnotherapist, and he routinely uses a technique of going inside, he calls healing hands, of having visualizing hands going inside and fixing areas that, you know, might be inflamed or broken or blocked or whatever. And there are amazing results from this type. It just seems like this is just another way of addressing the same mechanism that you're talking about with shamanic journeying, that even though it seems magic, the effects are real and physical. And so it goes back to the power of our thoughts and our imagination.
Yes. And the healing hands could be like an aspect of the inner healer or an inner healer.
Mm-hmm. An inner healer, absolutely. Yeah. So do you think that this is going to be a greater, more popular use of visualization in other areas of medicine? Do you think this is a technique whose time has come?
Well, in the field of complementary medicine, integrative medicine, you know, people certainly believe in visualizations, and they believe in the power of the mind, and they believe in meditation. The particular shamanic and Jungian nuances, in some ways, are talked about with other words, but I think they are useful adjuncts, and I've worked with a number of physicians, and a number of them are very open to these things, particularly when they experience for themselves the power in these realms. So, yes, I think that increasingly more people will be drawn to holistic medicine, and this is certainly complementary and a part of what I would call holistic medicine.
Mm-hmm. Or integrative medicine, yeah. It's
or integrative or complementary, yep.
Mm-hmm. Using all of the techniques available to us. I mean, why ignore a useful technique that has been shown to be useful just because it is not supported by double-blind control studies?
Yes, it doesn't cost much money, and there's very little harm. I mean, the harm would be if somebody doesn't do Western medicine that they really need to do because they're doing some of these practices. But if you think about it as an adjunct and think about it as a way to take more charge of your own health, then I think it's powerful.
And there's always the hope for a miracle. And this has been shown to be miraculous in many cases. I mean, the power of the mind is the miracle.
Yep.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and we don't know whether or not beyond the power of the mind, whether or not there are really these forces out there, and I believe there are, that we can engage with, and they, it's just separate from us, can do something. And that's kind of where you get into the mystical and the woo-woo that some people say, well, you're nuts. But I believe that it's not nuts.
Well, listeners to this program will have had quite a fair share of the mystical and woo-woo here, including that kind of healing technique coming from a higher source. So it's an interesting time, Carl, and it's exciting to see this growing openness. It really was fascinating to think of you changing course at the age of 60. We talk a lot about the aging and the burdens of aging, but not of the freedoms of aging, where you have the liberty to go and enter an area that just fascinates you. Kudos for that. And how difficult did you find it?
Well, I started off, you know, I was a university professor for a while, then I became a businessman, and then in my 40s, I switched into, I started studying to be a clinical psychologist, then a Jungian analyst. So I was kind of in transition, doing different things. I'd always been interested in the martial arts and certain energetic practices like Qigong, but it all kind of came together, as I said earlier, when I was 60 and I started to do some of the shamanic work. So I did it. I titrated it, Miriam. So I did a little bit here. This changed and it made me more open to do the next thing. So for me, it was kind of a meandering, just looking back, I was probably guided. At the time, I didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel you've come home now, or are there still new areas to explore for you?
I feel I'm for a 76-year-old guy, not pretty soon to be 77, I feel very happy and so blessed, and I hope that I'm open to that which comes in ways that I can serve however I'm called to do so, and I feel pretty freed up to do so.
So in our last minute, do you have a parting message for our listeners?
Well, think about, you know, where you came from, why you're here, who are you, what are you, where you're going to go when you're no longer in this physical body. And given some of those answers, you want to make some changes in your life that you haven't made up until now. And if so, what might they be? And if you need some energetic and inspirational ways to do that, I'm suggesting that these transpersonal realms can give you some of those energies that perhaps you haven't experienced before.
Mm-hmm. And there are many exercises in the book that will lead you gently through these, to these transpersonal realms. Well, Carl, thank you very much for being with us today. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Miriam. I enjoyed our talk.
We've been speaking with Carl Greer, the author of Change the Story of Your Health, coming out in a few weeks. You can get it all the good places. Come back and join us next week. I'm Miriam Knight for New Consciousness Review. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.